Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. This hour, we welcome Melody Shop and Deb Soholt to the program. The leaders are launching a joint venture called Influential She. Now, you most likely know Melody Shop as former South Dakota Secretary of Education. Rewind just a few years, and she served as a school teacher in Lemon, South Dakota, where she famously used a janitor's closet and her own AOL account to bring this new thing called the internet to her students. She has also served as president of the National Council of Chief State School Officers and a charter member of the School Superintendents Association's National Women's Leadership Consortium. And Deb Soholt is a four-term state legislator. She's a women's health pioneer and an award-winning registered nurse. Soholt chairs a National Council of State Legislatures Health Innovation Task Force, and she's known for her influential children's health bill that established the Center for the Prevention of Child Maltreatment in South Dakota. She's also known for her work as women's health director for Avera McKennan Hospital and University Health Center, where she established Avera's midlife care for women clinic, and that is just a sprinkling of experience from these two women. We could go on for the whole hour talking about what's been done, but let's talk about what's next. So they're joining me in the SCPB Sioux Falls studios inside the Kirby Family Studio. Deb Soholt, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Wow, Lori, thank you so much for having us on the show and for giving us the opportunity to talk about our new venture, Influential She. We're just really excited.
Melody Shop, thanks for being here as well.
Yeah, and thank you. And I'm going to... If you start looking on the website, I'm calling myself Mel, and it was a purposeful decision because when we were introducing ourselves, it was Deb Soholt and Melody Shop with three syllables. So growing up, I was Mel. So you can call me Mel today, and it's a new name and a new face for.
And you won't blame me for having called you Secretary Shop for so long that Mel's going to be it's going to be a little glitch at first.
She can go with Secretary Shop. It'll be okay.
No, that's fine. But just let's relax it up because that's where I am right now in my life and enjoying every second of it. But thank you, Lori.
All right, let's talk about Influential She because there's been so much planning behind this, and I'm going to start with you, Deb. How long? Tell me about, let's take way back to the seed of when you first started talking about this new something.
So what was so interesting and, you know, unbelievable to us in a way is that Melody and I really didn't even know each other until I got into the legislature. And I started following her my first year, but then in the second year, I was chairing the Senate Education Committee, and that's when I really started to become a fan and admirer of the things that she was bringing forward. It was really, and we started talking about policy all along the way because I was chair of that committee, but then we ended up working together with Representative Jackie Sly at the time. I was chairing Senate Ed, and Jackie was chairing the House Education Committee, and Governor Dugard tapped us to lead what you talked about in the introduction, that education funding reform bill. Through that effort, which is really an eight-month-long effort, Mel and I spent so much time together, and Jackie was with us too, but right. I would say we talked virtually every day about this education funding reform. We did 18 public hearings around the state of South Dakota. Through that, and a few glasses of wine, we started talking about, as we got to know each other, we were instant, not only professional connected friends, but we became philosophical friends, like right away. It was sort of like we had been on different lanes on the same thing, but we were running parallel to each other, and we just didn't know each other yet. Both of us were extremely interested in giving back, helping to, and this is about not just the younger generation of women, but women that might be stuck somewhere in their careers. And between us, we started talking about, well, we have 80 years of experience. So if we could distill that wisdom, what would that look like? What would we want to say? What would we want to try to communicate to women and to help them maybe not do some things the way that we did them? So between us, we could isolate, you know, in an aggregate, we each have about 15, 18 years that we call kind of wandering around in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. We eventually got there. We got these fun titles. We got to do really groovy things. We're ambitious. We want to contribute to something bigger than ourselves. But we spent a lot of time wasting time. And I think some of the mental models and the lessons and the things we'll get more into this that other people put on you, we didn't want to drag that forward anymore, and we don't want other women to even pick it up in the first place. Hmm. So when we started talking about it, it really ended up being, first of all, is it a leadership thing? Is it a mentorship thing? Melody had actually done her dissertation in mentoring concepts or a PhD. She'd done a lot of research work in this area. And we were just like, it's not quite it, because you may be in a formal leadership position, but we think it's bigger than that. We think it's just a story that we want to start telling to women. So one day, all of a sudden, we were like, oh, it's influence. Yeah. It's about influence, like wherever you are, in your family unit, in your community volunteerism, in a formal leadership role that you might be in, wherever the space is where a woman is at, what would it look like to have influence in that space? And how could you develop and accelerate being able to leverage that influence? And then the she came out, you know, we thought, okay, well, that's just a little bit, you know, it's pretty clear, pretty direct, influential she. But we wanted to demonstrate through our naming, who are we talking to? And it's not because we don't like men or we think that they're less than or we're trying to separate away. It's just that we are in a lived experience of being a woman. And we almost felt it would be arrogant for us to try to understand the lived experience of being a man going through developing influence. But as women, we could talk to women.
So we spent about, you know, you asked directly about when did this concept kind of happen. I don't think we can name a date and a time. It was towards the end.
I wish we could.
It would
be
really
down.
Nice to put a stake in the ground and say, hey, this one happened.
This was the day.
Yes, it was the day. But it was towards the end of, you know, when I was making the decision to re-career. And it's sort of the beginning of 2018. And what we would do is we would meet in the middle of the state in Chamberlain and get a room and just hammer out ideas over and over again. We actually did a... We took a trip out to the East Coast with one of my colleagues, spent some time out in this couple that I know out there and hold herself up in their house and put ideas on the wall. Mm-hmm. They were quite different from where we've come today, but
that was like over
a year and a half ago. And I've spent all this time in conversation that's evolved quite a bit over time, but with the same core principle of what we want to do in helping women to develop their influence and, you know, accelerate that trajectory going forward. But it's been interesting. We've seen these little points along the way, and then we'll have these breakthroughs of how we've been able to take the initial ideas, but take them to where we are today. And that's what's really been fun.
Well, and I had to think about buttoning.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
And I had to think about buttoning up a career.
Oh yeah.
So
right.
You know, I've been working full time for like forever, and so it was like, all right, well, if I'm going to do this, then I have to. And this was just we were in the concept phase. Yeah. We weren't, you know, actually implementing anything. But I thought, in order to really put the muscle behind it and to put the work in to get to this point, I am going to have to leave my corporate job because I'm still in the legislature. Right. And I was like, I can't do all three at the same time. Mm-hmm. I just can't. Won't have the energy capacity to be creative enough. So then there was this certain planning for how do I make an exit out of something that, you know, I love doing. Passion. I was, you know, passionately involved, but it was a season and a time. And so it felt right to move on. And so once I left my position at Avera doing this women's health work in January, I went right to the legislature, but then Mel and I really got busy working. And here we are today, ready to launch.
It's a big yes.
It's a big yes.
Say. In order to say that yes, you have to let some other things go and choose this. Were there any hesitations that you had to
get
to that yes?
I can't tell you how many times.
There's so much freaky space.
We still call each other. So we'll have those days and we'll call. It's like,
what are we doing?
What in the world are we doing? You have no idea. It happens. It happens frequently. Or we'll get into these times when we have a lot going on. But it's like, seriously?
Much easier to stay safe and comfortable.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and
but,
to have a defined title, you know? We both had these really clear titles. I knew exactly what I was doing.
Yeah.
I knew what my responsibilities were.
And we could deliver the outcomes within
those
roles.
Yeah, we did, because I knew, you know, we talked that we were both really good at making decisions, so that was really simple. But here you have this blank space and this blank canvas. It's like, oh my goodness, who do we think we are at in our middle 60s to think that we can do this? And yet we know that what we have put together is pretty powerful. And is resonating with women from across the country.
I think that's important. I want to jump in there because so many women who are in their middle 20s are struggling with that same moment and almost don't want to hear you say that. Like, I don't want to hear you say that, you had a moment of doubt, because so many women are, you know, how do you give yourself permission?
You will always
do that big thing. Yeah.
Always doubt. And I think here's the thing about growth. It has to scare you. So it does. You know, if you really want to push, if you really want something and you can see something, like for me, I had always imagined I was going to be an entrepreneur, but I became an intrapreneur. I was always starting new things, and I think sometimes to the distress of an organization, but, you know, like, what about this idea? And what about that idea? Mm-hmm. And so I was like, you know, one day I got clear last summer. I was like, you know what? I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. If not now, I don't think it will happen for me, because, you know, then it will become, I've just waited too long. I felt like these couple years of energy capacity before someone would think of a normal retirement. I don't even know what that means exactly. Mm-hmm. That, it, you know, if I didn't get going, I was like, ooh, I'm not certain. I think those 2 years of energy and space of time are really important years right now. So it felt very risky. And I think that's what growth is all about. It's got to kind of scare the crap out of you a little bit. And you wake up at night and you go, ooh, I, you know, do I really want to be on Cobra insurance instead of on this other insurance? Not really. You know, do I am, you know, starting a business in this big social media space, and I don't really know enough about it yet, but I'm going to. And so the growth, just personal growth for me in the last 6 months has been absolutely a riot.
And again.
But again. Yeah. It's scary. And there's days that are just like, I can't believe this is happening. I mean,
yeah, so
we're
we keep seeing the countdown on our countdown page. Like, so yesterday I pulled it up. It's like, Deb, come over here. This is so freaking.
I'm like, I can't even look at
7 days to launch, because it's like birthing a child, but it's been a longer than 9 months sort of thing. And you know.
Right. And we'll talk about some of the details of what exactly is launching for people to get to. I don't want to let this go because before I worked for public broadcasting, I was a print journalist and interviewed dozens, probably hundreds of women. And the women who were my favorite to talk to were always the women in their 50s or their 60s or even their 70s, because they just stood in a different space than the women in their 20s or 30s. You couldn't have launched this 20 years ago, could you have?
No, I don't know if it's not that we couldn't have. I don't know if we would have had the lived experience that we have today that we feel we can bring. The reason I caution in saying we couldn't have done it, because I think there's women out there today who have a lot of capacity that we didn't. We've been podcasting with women from across the country.
But I'm getting at the idea of acceleration.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, they're a lot further in their acceleration than probably I think I was, or that we think we might have been. We probably had it in us, but we were so, I would say, stuck in a very traditional type of pathway as far as how you accelerate your career. Mm-hmm. That's how I saw my acceleration, was I was going to stick in this career, and then I was going to take the next step and take the next step and take the next step. But it was a different sort of thing. So I don't know if we could be as freewheeling as we are today.
Probably not.
No. We were not as
well,
fun.
Maybe.
Well, maybe we were. We were just so buttoned down.
Maybe.
We talk about all the time how buttoned down we were. We have, so it's really hard to let go.
We're in recovery from being institutionalized.
We were so, we're in therapy.
We're wait a minute. No, that's old.
Yeah.
But the thing is that what we want to do is to help women at a younger age. So many questions we ask ourselves, hey, what would we have told our 30-something self? Oh, right. I wish somebody would have helped me with this, because I would have had more fun. I would have been more in my own skin sooner. I may not have had the wisdom to like really be in some of the spaces that I've been in and the roles that I've been in, but I would have let so many things go that we can clearly see unequivocally. We have no doubt. Yep. That's just nonsense. Like, don't do that. Mm. And this loop and this expectation, and this is where you're putting your energy. So we're excited to share those high leverage practices and to help accelerate the influence of women wherever they are.
Yeah. And even if they're at the point in their careers that we are.
Right.
I'll tell you what, we needed some therapy at that point in time when we were making this decision. So there's all sorts of points throughout your life, definitely younger women. But then it comes again. And, you know, how do you keep it going?
Right.
And how do you make sure that you can continue to contribute, which is what we're...
Yeah. As someone who just dropped her daughter off at college, you know, there is that moment where you'll come. And everyone came and talked to me and said, you're going to have this moment where you stand in the middle of your living room and you look around and you say, what next?
Yeah.
And I was determined not to have that moment. I don't know why. I can't explain it. But so I left dishes in the sink. When I took her out to college, she wanted to come back. I wouldn't have to say what next. I would just say, do some dishes.
Oh, I love
my goodness. But then I got to the point after it's been 2 weeks now where I thought, oh, you know what? There's something valuable about that moment that all those other women were telling me you'll have I'm trying to avoid.
You have to feel
it. So I stood in the middle of the living room and said, what next? And it was a different conversation than it would have been if it had sort of snuck up on me. Mm-hmm. But all those women were, I thought they were warning me, but they were really
helping
inviting
them.
Me.
Yes.
And the other thing is
that.
we just did a podcast with a woman who said sometimes you have to feel your way to the next step.
Instead of think it. Isn't that powerful?
Isn't that cool? That's good stuff. I just got goosebumps when I said it again because when I heard it, I was like, yeah, sometimes you just got to feel your way there.
Because we always think that we have to overthink things and think through what do we do next? What's the next thing?
We have to think things and we also have to work really, really hard.
Okay.
Like if you didn't come by it with the heart, you know, with the absolute hardest blood, sweat, and tears, and there's something in that overwork that you're going to address.
Are you working really, really hard for yourself? Yeah. That's the conversation we had this morning. Are we working really, really hard for ourselves? Are we working really, really hard for whether it's the organization or for where we think we should be rather than for who we are? And I think that's an important conversation for women to have because we can both say that that's what we did. We put our heads down, we came into our jobs, and I was working, you know, I was going to work harder than anybody else to prove my way, but I don't always proving my way for me.
And I think if it's for yourself, you're working hard. And you're still contributing to the outcome of wherever you're at. But if you're working for someone else, it's hard work.
And it's
there's
not fun.
A difference. And then that's just not as much fun.
All right. We're going to take a break.
Your joy.
We're going to come back and we're going to get into the brass tacks of what exactly influencency is and how people can interact with it. We have Mel Schopp and Deb Soholt here with us. We'll be right back on listener supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We are spending the hour with Mel Schopp and Deb Soholt talking about a new joint venture called Influential She. And let's talk a little bit about what exactly this is and how people can interact with it. Mel, it's a podcast. How do you describe it? What is it?
So we have a number of things that we're offering. So just want to remind everybody that we're officially launching a week from Monday on the 16th. Where our website will be available. And people are going to find that we have a number of things that are going to be part of that. And one of the things we've been doing a lot of before we get into the actual meat of who and what Influential She is we've been doing a lot of podcasting. And so we'll be releasing some of those. And I've met amazing women from across the country. Our goal is to release a podcast every week and have been kind of storing those up that have given us a lot of energy at this point in time. A lot of the core, though, of what Influential She has been built on is what we call these 10 high-leverage practices that have been distilled down from another of things that Deb and I have talked about for the last year and a half and are things that we really believe, again, is core to helping women to accelerate their influence. The thing about the 10 high-leverage practices is that they're not individual and separate. So it's not like you do the first one, you check it off and say, done with that. Now I can go on to number two. Because they're all intertwined because everything that we have created is really incumbent on the other things all working well within your life to be able to accelerate you. So it's not like it's not a checklist and it's not a step of, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and you get this one done and then you are suddenly influential. But it's really thinking more in depth about what are the things that I can do in my life that will help me to become that strong, confident woman. And so we can talk more about them. We also, Deb, you always explain this much better than I do. We know each other's strengths and weaknesses by this time. But talk about the talismanic part of our HLPs, because I love when you do that.
Well, we talk about our high leverage practices, or if you think about the concept of a lever, what does it do? The least amount of effort for the maximum amount of output. So that's where we are thinking about these practices being like a lever. We want that for you, that you would actually expend the least amount of your energy for the maximum amount of influence that you want to have in the world. But we started to think about how does this connect to an individual woman? And we call our high leverage practices, the 10 of them, the talismanic 10. So it's almost like unlocking the mystery of you. You know, so much of the literature out there, when we really took a hard look at like what's available, like what can women look into? And there's the very top end books from the CEOs, and there's not a lot of CEOs of women that exist even in the world. And there's some heads of government. They've written books, but to many women that feels somewhat unattainable. Like, I don't live in Silicon Valley and, you know, I don't want to.
Right. Yeah.
And then there's there's literature that has to do with how do you balance family? How do you go for a run? How do you have your job? How do you go get a massage? And in between, there's a significant gap. Now, some women have written books, but, you know, when we scan the literature, you know, like 90-95% is written by men. So he said there's like a gap here in trying to identify how does the female voice come forward and really give you some guidance on decisions you have to make for yourself. And so that's where the Talismanic 10 comes from. It's about the mysteries of you. We can't figure out the mysteries of you. You got to unlock them for yourself. Mm-hmm. But we can give you practices that can help you understand that for you. We also saw in the literature, to Mel's point, you know, they talk about the five steps and you'll be successful, or read this recipe and then here's the gift of whatever. And in that literature, you can certainly learn and you can glean steps for yourself. But we wanted to say, these are practices that are interconnected and they're part of a holistic you. It's an application of ideas. But yet there are some key categories of those ideas that you can assess your life and where you're at in relationship to that and that skill acquisition. And then you can decide if you want to learn more in that particular area, what areas are you feeling really strong about? And then you can start to work in the other areas that can help to build your influence and accelerate it. We want motion. We want acceleration. We want people to just have these juicy, great lives sooner
than what they had before. So we start out with one that's pretty obvious that we really feel, and that's the high leverage practice of self. And, you know, self is really based on really knowing very well and deeply your value systems and how that really becomes the core of who you are and knowing well. And so I think everybody talks about values a lot, but sometimes that's difficult.
Have you really claimed them?
Have you, like, yeah.
Have you listed them?
And do you know what they are? And sometimes Deb would say that's like a truth slapping sort of experience that you do when you think about, you know, what is your value system and how that follows you through in the decisions that you make in your life. So that's probably one of our core, I would say,
how
one of our
core. How easy is it to get knocked off that beam of your value system? Well, and I don't mean stealing or something hugely and horrible, but just you have one of those days where you come home and you say, that's not who I am.
Yeah.
That's not what I did.
Some can get so suppressed that you don't even remember that that was really a core value, but it's still there. It didn't go away. They're part of you. And so we want women to claim those and to list those and to start to use those as their, you know, their compass for how they start to make their way in the world. This is myself as I know myself.
Yeah. Do you think that your background in politics has helped you with something specific like that? Because, you know, so many times in political leadership, you're identifying with a party, for example, mm-hmm. or a platform that you have to articulate, whereas maybe in the business world, you could go a pretty long time without really having to claim that. But in politics, boy, you're going to be nailed to that. You know, what does it mean to be a conservative? What does it mean to be a progressive? What does it mean to be fiscally conservative? What are our values like right now? You have to be really good at articulating
that. I would say that, you know, this experience, well, actually going into politics, it was so interesting because before I went into that work, I had spent time really identifying my values. And I'd really spent this conscious time of writing them down. And so when I went to the legislature, I was very clear about who was showing up for that work. Now I had a ton to learn. And to your point, as the politics start pulling you and whatever, so all these labels of people would say, well, are you this or are you that? And I would go, yes. And so if I'd be going door to door and they'd ask me about something and I'd say, yes, I'm this and I'm that. And they're like, you can't be. And I said, yes, I am, because that's actually what I am. So having that figured out has helped me stay centered with myself. So those tough, tough decisions that have to be made, mm-hmm. I am making them from a space of integrity for me. And then what happens in relationship with others is then they can see and trust where I'm going to be grounded, because it stays consistent, because I'm not making it up. It's a part of who I am.
Yeah. But Lori, I would say that politics is part of really every facet of life.
It's everywhere.
You know, it really is everywhere. And I'm not talking about the political parties. We're not talking. But there's politics no matter whether you're in a job or in a position, or if you're thinking about where you are, your family is political.
Yeah.
So, you know, we call it politics, baby, you know, so there's going to be politics regardless of where they are. And what's so critically important is then that value system, regardless of the politics, but then all of that just kind of is your, you know, guides you and is your
moral
compass.
And that's all politics
compass.
Really is the
and
reconciliation
that's all it is. It's
of values.
Yeah, it is.
So if you don't understand your own value set, it's very hard. You can get moved in directions, and it doesn't mean you're not open to listening deeply mm-hmm. to people or changing your opinion or your mind, but it comes from that lens mm-hmm. of your own truth. Right. Makes a huge difference.
And then being able to understand and see that, which actually kind of leads into our second high leverage practice of what is. And it's having this clarity of just being able to say, you know, here's the reality. Mm-hmm. I'm in this position, I'm in this job, I'm in this relationship, and this is exactly what it is, and really being able to identify, not let go of the values, but and taking that scan of what is currently part of your existence, because it's really, really important, because we know that there are things that impact and influence, mm-hmm. regardless of where you're at in that space. And so that is a high leverage practice, that in being able to identify clearly, this is what's happening, whether it's in your internal or whether it's that external part, you yep. know? So there's two different, really, we call it the internal, the microsphere and the macrosphere, that we have within us and outside of us that impact about the what is happening in our life.
That can be incredibly difficult and challenging to
and
do.
You have to take
come to face with that reality, because
hard.
Sometimes
and you
got to
tell the truth, and yeah. you don't want to tell the truth. No. It's yeah. it can be painful.
It's painful, hard. Yeah. Because it's easy to be.
Has to be done though.
To be
if you want to accelerate,
yeah.
you got to know where you're at. Now, it doesn't mean that you can change everything and right. the circumstances, but to accelerate influence, you can adjust yourself, and even within a hard scrabble reality, mm-hmm. Find some joy in that, but then start getting clear on what decisions, which leads to another yeah. practice.
Right. But you know what? I think one thing that you and I talked about just not so long ago is that in the what is, so you can look at that what is can be, okay, I'm in this current job and I'm a parent, I'm a mother. I can't leave and go to Chicago. I'm just picking out of the air right. for my job. But there are things that you can change or you can think about. Talked about attitude. Yeah. So the what is I'm coming with this really, okay, I'm stuck. You know, you might feel like you're stuck. This is my what is. But there are things that you can identify that my attitude maybe is what does that look like? And what can I do to at least adjust that until I can make other decisions? Okay. So there's all sorts of things that, you know, the what is not just this is my job, this is where I live, this is what I do, et cetera, et cetera. It's a much bigger that we're going to talk about within this practice that we feel can be rather eye-opening for.
Tell me about a personal time in your own life where you had to face a big what is. And that you were able to move through. Because as you go through this, and I think it's important to remember with backgrounds in education mm-hmm. and background in healthcare, that you two are researchers. I mean, you're not just sitting down and brainstorming on a notebook.
No.
Here's what I think is important. I mean,
Exactly. So my what is that I was living in, like I said, I was a classroom teacher for 24 years in Lemon, South Dakota. So for those of you who don't know where Lemon, South Dakota is, it's the furthest intercontinental distance from McDonald's. In the entire nation. Look it up. Meadow, South Dakota is my actual home address. So here I am, you know, I was a city girl, moved and married, you know, a farm and a rancher, and I married the land, and I'm teaching for 24 years, and it's like, wow, this is my destiny. Not that I was unhappy. It was a great life for my kids, you know, a great family situation, but I was feeling really stuck. That was my what is. And it's like, okay, now what? Making the decision and having the opportunity then to think about, okay, my career could be different if I took a chance to work in the capital city in Pierre, which is 171.2 miles from my home. But talk about making and jumping and understanding what that reality was, but saying, what can I do different and still maintain some sanity within my normal life? That was a huge, it was a defining moment for me. I wouldn't be sitting here today had I not made that decision, because I'd still be teaching in Lemon, South Dakota, which wouldn't be terrible. Mm-hmm. But I had to make that decision and had to assess where I was at that point in time and then say, how can I make it and still have the reality of my life, but do it in a different sort of way?
Yeah.
But I had to do that with the support of family.
Right.
So
yeah.
There's all these other little factors. So that is the microsphere and the macrosphere, and how do they come together to be able to support the decisions that you're making? Because if you don't, you can
fall apart. What do you wish you had known now, back then, that you know now? What would you tell that?
I don't think I was as clear in my mind about what it was going to take to make those decisions happen, and having mm-hmm. the clear conversations not only with family, but there was also, it was difficult to leave the community who didn't understand, what is this woman doing? You know, she's leaving her family. They're sitting a long ways away. She's staying here, et cetera. I needed the clarity to be able to very clearly define why I was doing this. And I wish I had known. I don't know if I have any regrets over it. I shouldn't say that. But I think it was just to better understand how it was going to impact other pieces and parts of my life.
Right. Well, and I think in corporate world, like for me, it was being in an environment where, you know, you're passionate about things. You want to shift culture. I probably needed to hold back a little bit and to take a look at really scanning the landscape for, like, where is the authority line? You know, there's the mm-hmm. chain of command, but then there's also the informal authority. And to, like, really assess that, and what game am I in? Like, yeah. What game am I even playing here? And so many times I was playing a different game than what the organization was, and I couldn't understand why the organization didn't want to play the game I was in. Mm. Well, that's just crazy thinking. And so I look back at my younger self and I'm like, oh, for crying out loud. I was really investing way too much energy trying to get the organization to move to a different game when I should have been actually leveraging my influence in the game that was being played.
Which is what you're
so
doing today.
I was able to bring more to the legislature. Mm-hmm. But even in the legislature, you know, there was a trajectory of moving into a formal leadership trajectory, and I was a majority whip. And, well, then I did education funding reform as a Republican. Wow. Okay, which required an infusion of money to make that happen so we could have qualified teachers in the classroom. Well, here's the thing. If you're going to be a certain party leading the state for decades and decades and decades, sometimes you have to level set primary obligations to the public. So we had to do something. We had to go find that money. And the public was really behind us doing a half-cent sales tax increase. Painful. What that did is derailed a leadership trajectory for me within the legislature as far as the Republican caucus, because I'm just not conservative enough in people's viewpoints. So then I had to really level set and say, okay, now what? I have to assess where I'm at. And how am I going to develop new influence based on where I'm at? And so I got busy doing that instead of railing against, oh, why can't I be in the leadership chain or whatever. I just let that go and started. But it took a hard scrabble assessment to get there.
And it took you a while to let it go.
It did. I mean, I'm not going to say it was like, oh, I think, you know, like I got that all nailed down, you know.
Right.
No. So those are just examples of really getting clear about what is.
Yeah.
And sometimes you aren't doing it. And you end up wasting energy instead of really understanding the truth of the matter.
And Mel, you said something about just, you know, what other people are going to say about different things you're doing. And I think that grounds our conversation again to why is this influential she? Because I'm not entirely sure that if you had been the father in that family that heading to peer to do that would have been as confusing to people. Yeah. I can't prove that or quantify that, but it does seem like often, you know, women who make these adjustments, the first question is, you know, who's going to take care of your kids? Or are your kids okay with this? I think back to my grandmother, who was an excellent golfer in Fairmont, Minnesota, and had written a letter we found among her papers when she died to try to get, you know, Women's Day or, you know, get the course open to women on, you know, certain days of the week. And she went to the meeting and someone said, well, you should be home with your kids that day.
Wow.
Golfing, you know, like, this is a long time ago. She died at the age of 93, but you could see the influence in her community was simply based on getting women the right to golf on the course.
Yep.
And people were saying, that's not your place. Your place is to be home with your kids while your husband comes and golf. So this part of our identity as women and part of our history and some of the things that you're dealing with, especially when it comes to parents, to mothers.
To mothers. And it hasn't changed a whole lot. I mean, I think there's still that notion out there, a mother's, women's place. But there's a lot of things that you can make decisions based on that and still make it be influential. So I'm thinking the story you just told about your grandmother. Mm-hmm. And we think about where can you build your influence? She built her influence within that realm of being what she was in that community. She was influential in her own space. So we don't want women to think out there that's, oh my goodness, you've got to have a title or a role to be influential.
Right.
And that we have, you know, achieved that. Now we're, you know, there really is spaces where you can do that within that. But again, there are preconceived notions about women today that I think we're still battling.
If you go to that golf club today, you will see a trophy with the league champs for 13 years in a row. Her name is on there.
Oh, that's so sweet.
That's how good of a golfer that she was. So
what
she
golf
had to,
course is that?
But she had to get it's at the Interlochen Golf
that's
Club
great.
In Fairmont, Minnesota.
Listeners are going to go look when they go
they
by.
They just ask us to turn in all our trophies because we have all our golf trophies, and they've built a case
of
different women. Maybe it's men, too. I haven't been there to see it yet. But different golfers who really made it. Difference
that's
in
fun.
That, in that
that's
club
fun.
And in that community.
So what you're raising another point is a high leverage practice that we're bringing forward, which is unique and different, is called bio, like biology, bio-you.
Right.
And so we're going to open up this conversation about just the innate, it's biology. It's not good or bad. It's just biology of how we're put together different from men. And how that, you know, it's okay. We're mothers. We're women. Own it. Embrace it. But there are things about that hormonal rhythm that's going on in your body that is different from men, and women have to understand it. So if I'm going into a meeting with, like, well, I wish I would have known, 30-something men, really nice men, let's say they're just like a group of great guys, they are driven biologically by testosterone that somebody needs to win. That's just, I mean, it's inherently coursing through them. Like, and so if we show up to that meeting and we're one of a few females wanting all this collaboration and kumbaya to happen, you got to get ready to win. You got to get ready to play the game. So we have to talk about what that's like. And part of that whole, how our brain is wired differently because of our hormonal pathways and how we can crosstalk back and forth. And that's why some of the roles of women as mothers, as caring about that whole community and family unit, it's biology that drives us to want to nurture and do those things. Doesn't make us weak, mm-hmm. doesn't make us not decision makers or to have all these other skills. But we spend so much time trying to, you know, we were like, do it, you know, be like the guys, do like, no, be yourself,
yeah.
be a woman, claim that whole space. So we want to make sure that, you know, we're not another leadership thingy for chicks. And, you know, we're
being really. I love
that.
Really, I had that written down. We're not really, just another leadership thingy for chicks. Yeah.
And we also don't hate men.
No.
And we're not a big feminist movement. We're like, we even say we're wearing our bras.
Yeah, we're
you
not
know?
Burning them.
And so, you know, but so we're trying to just encompass it instead of run away from it. But your body biology will tell you when you're off kilter to you.
Right.
And your body always leads the answer before your mind can pick it up. And so we're going to start talking about what are the ways that you need to understand and claim that space. And normally you would think this is going to be in a women's health book or something somewhere, and my women's health background, but it is a part of a whole person being influential. You can't have that out in some other universe that we're talking about it separately. So we're being kind of crazy and bringing it to the forefront of what it takes to become an influential woman.
Yeah. And when you did the work that you've done over the years with women in midlife, that's another a big transition time for women. It's difficult to navigate because it's
difficult.
Not spoken about very much.
And the transition of being a young woman coming into like your cycling being. So we need to open that up. We need to have a conversation about that as about a practice of honoring the space of your body frame, your mind, body, spirit, so that you have then capacity to take these other practices on and accelerate them.
I think a lot of times in the spaces that we were in our professional lives, a lot of the reading that I would do or a lot of the tendencies were that women felt they had to bring themselves to the table to be more like a male rather than owning what they had to offer as a female. So it was always like, oh, if you can just, you know, lean in and be a little bit more like the guys, well, we can still be influential, as Deb said, within the space of being a female. And so those are some of the things that we want to talk about.
Yeah. We're talking with the founders of Influential She, and it launches September 16th, influentialshe.com. You can put your email address in there and get the updates. Follow them on Instagram and other places. We'll talk more about that with Mel Shop and Deb Soholt. When we come back, we'll take a quick break on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We are spending the hour with Deb Soholt and Melody Shop, and you can learn about their new project together called Influential She at their website, influentialshe.com. So I've got you on Instagram. I followed you on Twitter. I signed up for the emails. And
LinkedIn.
Facebook. I haven't done that. I haven't done LinkedIn or Facebook yet. Yes. All kinds of ways that people can connect. Yep. Are you seeing that kind of early excitement and feedback from people?
We are, but we got to tell every single person that's listening today, they have to start following us because we're going to build a huge audience of social media. So we'd really encourage people to do that. But we're seeing so much excitement, not only in our social media group, but as we're going out and people are really curious about what we're doing because they're hearing about it, get lots of excitement from across, not just South Dakota, across the country, because we've been out and about.
Well, and we want to open up this huge conversation online. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what it's about, is to really get women talking. And in fact, what's so interesting is a woman was starting to follow us from the Minneapolis area. Yeah. Anyway, she showed the website to her 15-year-old daughter, who's working with this empowerment group within her high school. And they are following us now on Influential She and starting to talk about how as teenagers they could accelerate their influence.
Right.
We are so excited about that.
And one of the things that excites me about this is that, you know, to the rest of the country, you're going to be Mel and Deb, but to us, you're always going to be South Dakota.
Oh.
And this is something about women from this space realizing that, you know, because there was a time and that you would, you know, you're from South Dakota. Who cares? Mm-hmm. You're from South Dakota. What can you possibly know? And here it is, like, the door opens. And if anybody does any digging, these are South Dakota voices.
Right. And we've had some amazing opportunities in our professional careers to have those touches outside of the state that have always been really valuable in helping us to get those connections back.
Yeah.
But, you know, I we do appreciate that, Lori.
And, you know, down the road, you know, what we envision is we're going to be doing interactive seminars and also, you know, keynote speaking and starting to get the conversation going in a different way. But we also envision down the road having influential groups, you know, that are starting to come together. Mm-hmm. Women do well in community with each other. Right. And that really came out. We had an opportunity with some people that had gone through leadership education at Harvard. We did a webinar with some women that came out of that program just to run these ideas by them to say, does this make sense? Does it? And they were very enthusiastic and supportive, but they said, no, don't forget how we like to come together. So one of the things, we're in the process of writing a book. And so, you know, not so much to think of that as such a lucrative venture, but to get these thoughts into a way that we can translate that in more of a whole document to people. And so, you know, we see ourselves, you know, talking to them through book clubs. We were talking about, you know, how you could order an influential book club package. Mm-hmm. So that's something we're envisioning for the future. And then with wine glasses, because we're all about the wine.
Yeah, we're all about the wine. We're also blogging.
You can get your box.
On our website. So we'll be blogging. I think one of the things can be really exciting for people to look at. We've been collecting quotes and pictures from women from across the country and the world, actually.
Yeah, from Zambia.
So when the website is launched, you're going to see a page where, and we'll continue to grow that. Right. But these amazing tidbits from women all over the country who have been giving us their input at what it takes to, you know, what right. advice would you give to somebody that wants to be influential? Yeah. So,
and we know that podcasts, you know, are a significant investment of time. So we are also pulling out nuggets from our podcast so that there's like a 2 to 3 minute clip.
Right.
Some of them, we've also done some videotaping with it, and some are just audio. But if you want to get just a little bit, or you want to get the whole thing. So we'll be offering that through social media in a variety of ways.
Anybody who drives across the state of South Dakota, like I do, has plenty of time
to listen
to the full podcast.
That's good. Yeah. That's really true.
It's one of the things that I enjoy about you've probably put a few miles on your car, Melody.
I have, Lori. Trust me.
So we've been kind of, and if you're on the Instagram page, you can kind of see these 10 sort of teas. These days where these 10 high leverage practices are coming, and we've talked about possibility. We didn't talk about possibility.
Not yet.
Talk about possibility.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, that's really, so Melody talked about that a little bit earlier, where she was saying, I assess my environment of being like in lemon, but I envisioned a bigger possibility for myself. So even if you're in a space where you just have to stay in that space for a variety of reasons, the income that's coming into your family, the health insurance or whatever, if you've assessed that environment, you can then leverage possibility and think about where am I headed and start to move in that direction. But you have to move beyond your current reality and think about what's possible for me based on myself. So we're going to be talking more about, you know, really developing that vision for yourself, that even though you're in this place, your vision can be like, I always thought I'd run for office. Well, here I am. I ran for office. I always thought I'd be an entrepreneur. Well, here I am. So sometimes the timing isn't always what we would want it to be, but the possibility was always there so you can start moving in your skill development towards that possibility.
And I think it
something
kind of feeds
bigger than yourself.
Yeah, it feeds into another high leverage practice we have of as if. Mm-hmm. Which is acting, sort of thinking about, okay, if this is what I want, I'm going to act as if I am that. You know,
and nobody has to give you permission to act as if.
To act as if, because you're coming with this that you can offer, that you can be. And so, again, as you can see, as we're talking with them, all of these high leverage practices are so interconnected, but they have really specific things. But I think the possibility and as if, when we think about that, what's a possibility? And then if that's the possibility, I'm going to own that, and I can take what I have right now and be thinking about and taking with me and be as if I'm going to be.
Right. As if I can do it. It goes back to what you said in the beginning about it's not a checklist. It's not 10 things to do, and then, whoop, you've arrived.
Nope.
But there's an interconnectivity here. There's a wholeheartedness. There's
wholeheartedness.
Yeah. Which is, talking about connectivity,
such
there's
a beautiful
an HLP of connection, which we truly believe in and is so critically important. I think we joke about that people think that connection means that you go to a social and you hand out your business cards and get everybody's email address and you start on social media. And we see it as much larger than that. So connection
and
is
sometimes
really new.
It can be one connection.
Yes.
Like one that you see a possibility, but then you figure out how to develop an authentic connection in relationship to that of
it's
where
good news
you're
for all
going
the introverts out there.
Yeah. It's a good news for all the introverts, you know, that would say, I always laugh and say, you know, my favorite thing is like a room full of people I've never met. So, and other people go, are you joking?
And I'm the introvert who's like, no, so I'm the inside introvert.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
But connection can come in many different ways. And in fact, that's been the great thing about us doing what we've been doing. Every time we meet somebody, we're making the next connection.
We're making the next connection. But also, we have to talk about how do you connect with people you don't really like all that well.
Right.
It's easy to hang out with people that you like and they philosophically think like you do. And, you know, you're just kind of glad-handing each other all around. It feels really great. Mm-hmm. We need to have people like that in our lives. But we also have to be able to connect with people that we don't really care for. And to figure out how to do that and not spend a lot of time expending energy in the wrong place. So many times we get all wrapped around the axle and, you know, wanting to change that person or make it different.
No,
you got to assess what is and figure out what kind of connection you're going to have in relationship to what is. And if it comes from your values of self, then you are able to do that in a space of integrity without acquiescing to whatever that is. So we've got some tips on how to do that and some things that you can say so that you're not creating an abrasive situation, but you're honoring and respecting someone.
Still being genuine.
But you're not saying to them, well, I agree with you or I don't agree with you.
And I want to close with this in our remaining few minutes that we have. Is I pulled this from some of your social media feed that said, when women have influence, a better humanity emerges. Now, you're not just, you know, you're not playing small there.
No, we're not.
No.
Tell me why you believe that to be true.
Will you start? And I'm going to, I have some thoughts I want to finish up with.
You know, honestly, that just... That is what it's about. And, you know, it's a really, we've claimed a couple of very big things about a better humanity emerges. But here's the thing. We're 51% of the population. We hold the keys to the population moving on. And it is so important that this different viewpoint that is grounded in a different biology is a part of how we move and progress forward, you know, as a world and as a community.
And also, I think that what women can bring with the nurturing side of them, instead of that being a negative, seeing it as a positive, that we can really support the humanity of really the world itself. And so women bring a unique talent that can also lead to them being extremely influential within that space.
It's a moment to sort of step back and take a breath and realize all those voices that we have not heard from yet, whether it's a new woman, you know, easing into adulthood, or whether from around the globe, what is about to happen, and how this can kind of help open the door for some of those conversations. Mel Schaap, Deb Soholt, influentialsheet.com. The launch is on September 16th, and we'll have you back to talk more after some of those podcasts are live. You're welcome here on SDPB Radio anytime.
Thank you so much, Lori.
Thank you so much, Lori.
Yeah, it's been fun to be here.